Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So we've got the 911 call that Kim Fox's hubby and gamer, apparently, Kelly Fox, made last week. We talked about it. We got a copy of the police report was made public several days ago, the beginning of this week. Now we have the 911 call that Mr. Fox made on Mrs. Fox, and here's what that says.
911, what is the city of your emergency?
Flossmore.
And what's going on there?
Domestic issues.
Okay, is it you or someone else?
My wife and I.
Okay. Is it physical or just verbal?
Physical.
Is anybody injured?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Okay, any weapons?
Don't touch me.
Get out. Sorry, are there any weapons in the house?
No.
Okay. Anybody been drinking tonight?
No.
Okay. What's your last name and what's your name? Okay. I do have them coming over. Are you guys outside, inside?
Say again?
Are you guys outside or inside?
We're outside. There's a car pulling up.
You said you see the police?
I do.
Okay. I'll let you go speak with them.
Thank you.
Did he say a car phone? What decade do they live in down at the Fox household? What's the game console that was knocked out of his hands? In television? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. I'm sorry to chuckle at the don't touch me as he's talking to the 911 dispatcher, but I got to say this case is has me a bit conflicted. On the one hand, you know, you have to take domestic incidents seriously, sometimes including if the man or the husband or the boyfriend is the alleged victim. But on the other hand, more interesting thing to me so far is we've had a week since the report, police report was released. And maybe I've missed it. Please, if I've fallen down on the job, let me know. I'm looking at stories related to the release of the 911 call, and I still don't see any questions asked or comments from Kim Fox or Tony Preckwinkle or Triple Threat or the Chicago Police Department. So let's start with Superintendent Brown. I mean, this is the Cook County State's Attorney. And the posture of law enforcement and the culture is to take incidents of domestic abuse seriously in whichever direction they go. It was technically, if what he alleges is true, an assault and battery. So why wasn't Kim Fox taken into custody? The question is, if it had been Kim calling on Kelly with the exact same facts or allegations, would Kelly Fox have been taken into custody? Probably. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Fox Chicago reporting on this. The source for Fox 32. We all knew about it right when it happened, but we were waiting for the corruption to start. How would they make this go away? The source said, we're always told we have to be held to a higher standard. She is our boss. So this is an anonymous source from within the Cook County State's Attorney talking to Fox Chicago. The source added, the incident will likely go away. I'm born and raised here in Chicago. I think it's going to go away like everything else. When the machine Democrats get in trouble, they make it go away. The only statement that's been issued so far from them jointly, I'm talking about the Foxes, this is a personal family matter. We ask that you provide our family with respect and privacy. Well, no, I'm sorry. I can't do that because she's the Cook County State's attorney. And because we're talking about the rule of law and how it relates to the top prosecutor in Cook County and how it compares or contrasts for how the rule of law works for every other resident of Cook County. So, no, I don't think we can respect your privacy and allow this to be a family matter. It's a law enforcement matter. You know how I know? Because your husband called 911 and the police showed up. That's how I know it's a law enforcement matter. So the question now is just how this unwinds and what sort of accountability anybody demands of Kim Fox, the Chicago Police Department, your elected officials in Chicago and Cook County. Do I have that right? I'm not making more of this than it is with respect to the disagreement, fighting, console grabbing, slapping between, done by Kim towards Kelly, her husband, according to Kelly, and according to the police report, she said what he was saying to the police officer was true. So there's a excited utterance, confession of sorts. This is a question not about that, except to the extent that it implicates the rule of law and the application of the law. And maybe this is just prosaic. Maybe I'm still a babe in the woods, lo these many years in the big city. But, I don't know. I thought there would be some application for the rule of law. I didn't think that Kim Fox was above the law, particularly something so straightforward and easy to understand. I mean, you know, you can bury the public in legalese and complications when it comes to things like spiking the Jussie Smollett prosecution. This is pretty straightforward, and everybody immediately understands it.
But and it doesn't matter, too. If it was a Republican lawmaker, they would be all over this. The news media would. But they would, you know, and I tried to ask the mayor, hey, have you talked to Kim Fox? Like, no. That's personal. Like, no, she's friends. Aren't they friends? Did she talk to Kim Fox?
What is that? I don't care if they're friends or not. It's not personal.
It doesn't matter.
This is a law enforcement matter. The Flossmoor police, I shouldn't say Chicago, the Flossmoor police responded. I shouldn't say Chicago. So when are we going to hear from the Flossmoor police? But, I mean, Chicago police, it's relevant here, too, because she's the Cook County State's attorney. It doesn't need to be limited to Flossmoor police. I'd be happy for any police department, any law enforcement agency in Cook County. How about Tom Dart's office to respond to this matter?
If he slapped her, he would be in jail. But she slapped him. And she's not in jail. And that's what's wrong.
Well,
sorry, I mean,
right.
What about equity?
Taken into custody, right? If it was Kelly who had done that to Kim, would he be in custody for a night?
Yes.
And bonded out, yes. And then.
And lead every newscast in the city and nationwide.
And the Foxes are going to get away with this. It's a personal family matter. We ask that you provide our family with respect and privacy. I'll provide your family with the same respect that you're providing Cook County families, which is not much.
And that police chief at Flossmoor can't call him enough or email them. Like, oh, he's in a meeting. Like, still? Wow, he's been in a meeting for 2 weeks. That's a long meeting.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. They're just going to avoid, hoping it just goes away.
This Fox Chicago source. I'm born and raised here in Chicago. I think it's going to go away like everything else. When machine Democrats get in trouble, they make it go away.
Uh-huh.
Marvin in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I just maybe thinking that she could call Jussie Smollett and ask for a reprieve, and maybe, you know, he'll call Michelle Obama, and then she can call somebody else, and then, you know, it'll, like, you just get, you know, just, you know, no big deal, nothing to see here. And like you say, like we always talk about, and you know better than anybody, no accountability from the voting public. I mean, this is a This is what they apparently enjoy, and it's going to continue until that changes.
Well, the beatings will continue until morale improves. Yes, Marvin, thanks for the call. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Biden administration weighs declaring public health emergency to protect abortion access. Oh, we're going to treat abortion like COVID. Is that what the big guy has in mind? Yeah. One of a number of proposals under consideration to use executive orders to blunt the impact of the expected overturning of Roe v. Wade, so the New York Times reports. Of course, this would be met with legal challenges. But the declaration of a public health emergency could ostensibly allow the Department of Health and Human Services to suspend their state-based medical licensing regime so that blue state doctors could perform abortions in states where abortion is outlawed or restricted.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA and then a quick comment.
The Biden folks may also make proposals to prepare the Justice Department to litigate against states that attempt to outlaw abortion tourism and to confirm that state prohibitions on abortion cannot interfere with the distribution of FDA-approved abortifacients as well. Yeah, you know, we got to keep that blood money flowing to Planned Parenthood. I get it. Speaking of blood flowing, the pro-abortion domestic terrorists...
Well, that Jane's group, or what are they called? Jane's Revenge.
Ruth sent that? Us. Jane, yeah.
Jane's Revenge.
Okay, there are many. There's a letter that was sent to Attorney General Merrick Garland demanding action on a string of violent and destructive crimes against pro-life pregnancy centers in the United States. This... something we talked about yesterday with Amy Gerke, the executive director of Illinois Right to Life. More than two dozen documented incidents of violence against pro-life advocacy groups and crisis pregnancy centers that, you know, serve pregnant women since the Dobbs draft opinion was leaked. So I know A.G. Garland is always on the lookout for domestic terrorists. Normally that means anybody who comments negatively about school board policy at a school board meeting. Maybe that should include people that are firebombing crisis pregnancy centers. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Pro-board Pelosi was asked about this yesterday, the violence, and here's what she said.
Saying anything, and they're saying that your rhetoric is contributing to these attacks on these crisis pregnancy centers.
Well, let me just say this. A woman has a right to choose, to live up to her responsibility. It's up to her doctor, her family, her husband, her her significant other, and her God. This talk of politicizing all of this, I think, is something uniquely American and not right. Other countries, Ireland, Italy, Mexico, have had initiatives to expand a woman's right to choose. Very Catholic countries. I'm a very Catholic person, and I believe in every woman's right to make her own decisions.
She's not Catholic. She's very Catholic.
Very Catholic.
What does that even mean?
Ireland, really.
Ireland. The Irish.
Ireland bans abortions after 12 weeks. So you would support that law for California? You would support that law in the United States, Nancy Pelosi? No, of course not. The question was about violence. She won't condemn pro-abortion violence.
I mean, it's open season right now for this Jane's Revenge. They sent the letter. They're ready to go. You have a 30-day deadline, they wrote, for pro-life groups to cease operations.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In any other context, this sort of activity and these sort of threats would be treated much differently, and you'd get the hand-wringing from politicians. Here, not just threats, but dozens of incidents of actual violence, which included threats, you know, more threats on top of the actual violence. And it's met with a women's right to choose, a woman has a right to choose, and so on and so forth. So here we go again. I asked this question of Amy Gierke yesterday. It'd be interesting to see if you have Democrat socialists do in 2022 what they did in the summer of 2020, which is rationalize political violence. In 2020, it was Black Lives Matter, defund police. It was race identitarianism. In 2022, it'll be over their what is a sacrament to the left, which is killing children.
Yeah, this letter that they wrote is sick. They described how easy and fun it is to attack and vowed to take increasingly drastic measures against oppressive infrastructures.
Yeah, Andy Ngo published some of the musings of Jane's Revenge, and we've talked about the correspondence and the attitude of Ruth Sentus and these other pro-abortion groups. And by the way, Andy Ngo, that the sort of guerrilla journalist who was attacked by Antifa,
right,
and he's been following Antifa's domestic terrorist activity for the last several years. He makes the point that Jane's Revenge is connected to Antifa, which is no surprise.
They're
all in it together.
From here forward, any anti-choice group who closes their doors and stops operating will no longer be a target. But until you do, it's open season, and we know where your operations are. Dear Lord, why isn't this on leading the newscasts locally?
Despite these threats, you have some good news. Governor Kristi Noem tweeting yesterday, abortions have stopped in South Dakota. We have prayed for this day. Now it's here. Now we must redouble our focus on taking care of mothers in crisis. Help is available for you. Adoption is an option. You're never alone. The last abortion business in South Dakota closed up shop. So, you know, this opinion,
better be careful. These
this Dobbs opinion is coming down before the month is out. So you better get ready, because even in abortion on demand states like Illinois, you're going to see rioting in the streets.
Yeah, Governor Pritzker is encouraging it.
And you may also see violence directed at pro-life organizations that, like Illinois Right to Life. We were just talking to Amy Gierke yesterday, as I mentioned. She talked about the disgusting calls that they've received. Thankfully, no violence so far, but the disgusting calls that they've received, like all these other pro-life or pro-family organizations, they need to be on guard, literally. And this is this was the impetus for the letter that faith leaders sent to the Department of Justice saying, you know, are you seeing what's going on? Do you want to intercede at all on this? It's not like they're being real cagey about who's responsible.
They're bragging about it. They're inciting. They're saying, you know, we're coming to get you. It's open season.
Tony, Downers Grove.
Hey, Dan. You know, this is not a surprise. Pelosi, how despicable to say what she said. But, again, there was nothing said about Kavanaugh. We saw when the rioting was going on, there was no real criticism there. And I'm just beating the drum again about the Republican lawmakers standing front and center and pointing this stuff out every chance they get. If DeSantis could be cloned, that would be such a great thing. Just call it like it is, and they just don't have the gumption to do that. By the way, I was away for a couple of days. I get back home. I get into my mailbox. It is so overly stuffed with voting information. Way to hit the ground running 1 week before the primaries. Have a good Friday, guys.
Oh, it's been
all
coming
right.
Constantly.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah. But if you don't get your mail in a few days, you're going to have a bunch there.
Mike in Union.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Hey, you know, the federal government's in action and the attorney general, you know, it's almost as if it's a state-sponsored terrorism. They can do whatever they want, no prosecution, no comments. But if a school board or a teacher goes to a school board, then they are a terrorist, per se. I mean, somebody needs to call this out and start putting pressure on these people.
Thanks.
Well, they know who they are. They wrote a letter saying, you know, we're coming after you. They named locations, Madison, Wisconsin, Fort Collins, Colorado, Des Moines, Iowa, Asheville, North Carolina. You know, I mean, why haven't they arrested them?
Uh-huh. And, but this is getting very little coverage. Meanwhile, last month when the San Francisco Archbishop Cordeleone said no communion for you, Nancy Pelosi, very Catholic speaker, very Catholic.
No,
Yeah, very Catholic. I know.
Oh, my God.
I don't even know what that means, but I know the position she's taken, and so does the Archbishop, and so no communion for her. This was a big story. This was something to be debated and to be discussed. Pro-life organizations, crisis pregnancy centers being attacked.
50 of them.
Violently. No, nothing. Nothing? Anybody got anything? No.
50, okay. Almost 50 have been attacked across in churches.
Greg in LaGrange.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I find it even despicable on Pelosi's level to use her Catholicism as a weapon or as a shield against these attacks on how a woman has a right to choose. The bottom line here, Dan, is like anything else. Michael Anton put it perfectly about 2022. There are two justice systems in this country. There's a justice system for the middle class, us regular people, conservatives, and people that want to live unencumbered life by government, and then there is the justice system that is provided to the elite, the ones that have division. And we're in the latter, not the former. And I think what the Republican leadership in this country has woefully, woefully felt inadequate in doing is illustrating that. And we should be pounding this every day. And for that Catholic bishop in San Francisco, more power to him. I wish we had guts in Chicago, but we don't. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Yeah, I mean, it seems to me more and more the justice system isn't even the two-tiered or multi-tiered justice system isn't like it used to be conceived. There's a different justice system for people with money versus people without. It's straight politics.
Mm-hmm.
What is the political position of the alleged assailant? What is the political position of the alleged victim? Then we'll decide how to handle the case. Tom in Deer Park.
You know, it's a tough time to be a pro-life Catholic in the United States. Last week, there was one bishop promoted to Cardinal McElroy of San Diego. He's not anti-life, but he's a very progressive bishop. And then you look at what happened to Bishop Barron, who is in the second largest archdiocese in America, of Los Angeles. He's been very pro-life. He didn't get a promotion to cardinal. What he got was a transfer to Rochester, Minnesota, the Archdiocese of Rochester. So I'm not sure how these things work, but it sure seems very interesting to me how the bishops get moved around and promoted or how they don't based on their attitudes toward many things, including the pro-life movement. I'd be curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I think Robert Barron got bounced out to L.A., thanks, Tom, because Cardinal Supich didn't want him in town. Yeah. I mean, Robert Barron is a very important Catholic theologian. His Word on Fire series is, I mean, so good, and it's been so impactful. He's a very articulate, thoughtful Catholic theologian and real thought leader within Catholic circles. And, yeah, I mean, the politics that besets the church, there's no question, because of the schism within the church between the modern-day liberation theologists, a la Supich, and, catechism-oriented Catholics, or as Nancy Pelosi might call them, the very Catholics.
I'm Catholic. No, I'm very Catholic. But this letter, I can't get over this letter. They're encouraging anyone with the urge to paint, to burn, to cut, to jam, to come forward. Well, we will never stop, back down, slow down, or retreat. We did not want this, but it is upon us, and so we must deal with it proportionally.
Can't wait to get a response from A.G. Garland's office. I know how concerned he is about domestic terrorism.
Through attacking, we find joy, courage, and strive. What? This is sick. And this was emailed out, this letter, to a lot of people. It's a call to arms, right, Dan?
Terry Rogers Park. Call to sell arms.
This Wednesday, I told Sean Thompson about a sign I saw on a car in Evanston that said, "We won't go back." I didn't know what it meant till a lady called in and said it was a pro-abortion sign.
Right.
Taxpayers shouldn't be forced to pay for abortions.
They do in Illinois.
Thanks for the call, Terry. Well, we talked about this a bit the other day. You know, just remembering where the actual distribution of opinion is. The majority of Americans support prohibiting abortion after the baby has a discernible heartbeat. So these heartbeat laws that were being passed at the state level around the country over the last couple of years, that's where the majority of the country is. Majority of the country. So the left's position of abortion on demand, if the baby is born, that's when we have a conversation, KKK Northam, everything is at taxpayer expense. That is a extreme minority, both in terms of viewpoint and numbers. Small minority of Americans who hold those positions. And this is to the point, I think, Tony and Tom were making, which is stand up and articulate your view and go toe-to-toe intellectually with the pro-abortion left. Don't get cowered by their hysterics about women's rights any more than you get cowered by the race hustlers saying, you know, your white skin makes you a racist, makes you privileged, and my black skin makes me a victim.
Don't feed into that.
Stop. Yeah, don't be on defense against these.
Oh, they're barbarians.
These new Marxists. 1 minute. And I'm obviously the people are violent. That is.
Well, but they're also encouraging attacks on churches in this letter, too.
Also, people who are violent. Yeah, so attacks on churches would include that's violence.
Right.
Obviously, they're beyond the pale. I'm talking about, you know, so-called reasonable people, nonviolent people who think, and so they've been, I don't know, brainwashed to believe that these radical positions they take, abortion on demand, all at taxpayer expense, up until, you know, the kid's ready for pre-K, is where the country is. It is not. The majority, I say it one more time, the majority of the country doesn't believe in abortion after a heartbeat is detected. So you're talking about 16 weeks, 20 weeks. That's, by the way, that's also where a majority of the world is.
Right.
Socialist states like France.
Yep. Ireland.
Letting them, you know, dictate the terms of debate by focusing in on anomalous cases. Here's where the country is. Here's where we need to be. If we could move the debate and policy in that direction in Illinois, well, that would be seismic. First of all, in terms of the number of lives saved. but you got to have your wits about you, and you got to make the case. And frankly, these people who are hysterics and engaging in violence, they will do to the pro-abortion movement what the rioters and defund the police politicians did to law enforcement, which is to make the case for law enforcement among reasonable people, just to make the case for abortion being at worst in places like Illinois, safe, legal, and much more rare. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I'm really looking forward to Republicans taking control of the Senate and...
in the House.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to them taking control of the Senate, so when Rand Paul is chairman of the Health, Education, and Labor Committee, we can get right to COVID hearings the beginning of next year. So we'll have to take the intermittent times under the current leadership of the Senate, where Senator Rand Paul has the opportunity to interface with one Tony Fauci. That happened yesterday.
Yeah, again, he had to do it via Zoom because he's got the vid, man.
Typhoid Tony was via Zoom, that's right. And the topic that Rand Paul started with for his 7 minutes at the turn, boosters for kids, which is a salient topic since FDA is greenlighting boosters for kids, the Pfizer Moderna boosters. Sick. And, of course, this will be promoted incessantly by COVIDian politicians the world over, starting in this country,
yeah,
and certainly in Chicago and Illinois.
Yeah, and in Chicago, like you don't have to quarantine anymore if you've had an exposure, because just get boosted. 6 months to 5 years. And thank God for Governor DeSantis, because he did not pre-order his COVID shot, but that's a different issue.
Are people still quarantining?
Yes.
People really doing that?
Yes. People are still wearing masks. I mean, to go to my church, you have to wear masks. But you see people all over Chicago wearing masks. And when I see somebody wearing a mask, I'm like, my God, are you sick? I run from them.
Here is the exchange between Paul and Fauci on boosters for kids, and the case that Rand Paul makes that, you know, there's not any evidence to support the zeitgeist behind boosters for kids under five.
Dr. Fauci, the government recommends everybody take a booster over age five. Are you aware of any studies that show reduction in hospitalization or death for children who take a booster?
Right now, there's not enough data that has been accumulated, Senator Paul, to indicate that that's the case. I believe that the recommendation that was made was based on the assumption that if you look at the morbidity and mortality of children within each of the age groups, you know, zero to five, 5 to 11.
Right. So there are no studies, and Americans should all know this. There are no studies on children showing a reduction in hospitalization or death with taking a booster. The only studies that were permitted The only studies that were presented were antibody studies. So they say, if we give you a booster, you make antibodies. Now, a lot of scientists would question whether or not that's proof of efficacy of a vaccine. If I give you 10, or if I give a patient 10 mRNA vaccines and they make protein each time, or they make antibody each time, is that proof that we should give 10 boosters, Dr. Fauci?
No, I think that is somewhat of an absurd exaggeration.
Well, that is the proof that you use. Your committees use that. That's the only proof you have to tell children to take a booster is that they make antibodies. So it's not an absurdity. You're already at like 5 boosters for people. You've had, you know, 2 or 3 boosters. It's like, where is the proof? Now, I think there is probably some indication for older folks that have some risk factors. For younger folks, there's not. But here's the other thing. There are some risk factors for the vaccine. So the risk of myocarditis with a second dose for adolescent boys 12 to 24 is about 80 in a million. This is both from the CDC and from the Israeli study. It's also in the VAERS study, remarkably similar for boys, much higher from boys than girls and much higher than the background. The background's about 2 per million. So there is risk and there are risks. And you're telling everybody in America, just blindly go out there because we made antibodies. So it is not an absurd corollary to say if you have 10. In fact, you probably make antibodies if you get 100 boosters. All right? That's not science. That's conjecture, and we should not be making public policy on it.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Are you going to get your minor children boosted? Or if you have, continue to, as long as the CDC is promoting the idea?
6 months to 5 years. That's what they're going to prove that. Would you do that? Would you let your grandkids? What are you telling your children about your grandchildren getting boosted?
Well, and again, per Rand Paul, we're talking about kids. So minor kids, you have control of your minor kids. So 0 to 18, are you going to be squiring them to some site to get boosted every time there's a new booster that gets the green light from FDA and CDC?
And a lot of colleges are requiring it, that you get boosted. Now, the 2 shots are not enough. Now you got to get the booster in order to go to school in the fall.
Well, sure. We're following the lead of the Canadians on that. We played yesterday. But Paul went on to challenge Fauci.
Good.
A man of science and data. You know, all these COVIDians are men of science and data. Okay, well, where is the data on hospitalizations and death?
The question I ask is, how many kids are dying and how many kids are going to the hospital who've already had COVID? The answer may be 0, but you're not even giving us the data because you have so much wanted to protect everybody from all the data because we're not smart enough to look at the data. When you released data earlier, when the CDC released the data, they left out the category of 18 to 49 on whether or not there was a health benefit for adults 18 to 49. Why was it left out? When critics finally complained, it was finally included because there was no health benefit from taking a booster between the 18 to 49 and the CDC study.
No health benefit.
0.
CDC study.
Yes.
From the booster. 18 to 49. And we don't know, because Fauci said we don't know on 0 to 18. But take it anyway, because we think.
And that's the irresponsibility of it all. It's the lowest risk group, especially 6 months to 5 years old.
My sense is there's like, I don't know. I don't think it's half the population, maybe a third of the population that is still somewhat in the throes of COVID and is paying attention to all of this stuff and is actually listening to what the CDC or the FDA has to say about these things and having that inform their decisions about what they do for their children.
Yeah.
Do you get the sense that people are actually listening and trying to discern whether or not to get their kid boosted for the second or third time, that 18 to 49 year olds are thinking about when is the next time I'm supposed to get my next booster?
5 months after your last. There's people. Moms that still won't go out to dinner. They're featured on local news, and I'm the dumb who still watches local news, but I love it. That are still, they canceled vacations. They said no to weddings. they don't go out, Dan, because there's not a boost or a vaccine yet that's been approved for 6 months.
I understand, but I'm just trying to get a sense of order of magnitude here. Maybe there's some surveying that should be done. But, yeah, I'm sure everybody knows somebody like that within their social circles. Mm-hmm. But I mean, is it the outlier? There's a few people, or I see some things. But, I mean, it just seems to me like center mass, nobody is thinking or talking about this. Like, you have to be a member of a teacher's union or a Pritzker staff in order to be thinking about this. Am I wrong? Am I missing it? Is this still a hot topic of conversation and debate among you and your friends and, you know, if you're a parent with other parents vis-a-vis your kids? I just don't sense that it is. Maybe I'm wrong. Pat in Lockport, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning, guys. You know, that lunatic Fauci, so help me God, he's the poster child for failure and lying. This dumbass is vaxxed and boosted, and he's got COVID. Well, he really is somebody that you should follow as far as efficacy and common sense. And who in their right freaking mind would believe anything that the CDC comes out with and says?
Never again.
I am so grateful to God that in my family, 98% of the people from old bad great-grandma, me, down to a 4-pound, 4-ounce preemie, didn't go near that stinking vaccine. There's never been approved, and these damn fools are driving in their cars, rolling up their sleeves to have a number one crap that they don't even know about shot into their bodies. And then when the cases come out with, you know, facial paralyzation, myocarditis, and all kinds of blood clots, and increase in cancer, oh, they've got their finger in there, you know what, wondering what the hell happened. God, have we got a country of damn fools?
Thanks for the call, Pat. Now, again, let's separate. I mean, you even heard Senator Paul make the point. It's accurate one. The booster shows some efficacy for older people with comorbidities. We've talked about sort of the distribution of risk here. It is very different, even in this where we are now after the variants and the vaccines, very different risk profile for, you know, under 18 versus over 70. So let's not paint with too broad a brush, because that's exactly what the COVIDians have been doing, and I don't want to fall into that trap.
Text message. If you gave your dog 4 rabies shots and it got rabies, would you keep giving your dog shots?
Hmm. Probably not that one. Yeah. And also too, it's not even getting, because we're never gonna, or we weren't. Nobody's suggesting, or serious people have been saying, you're not going to eradicate it.
Right.
So the question is, you mitigate the lethality of it, and if there's evidence that the boosters mitigate the lethality, okay, fine, we'll present it. That's essentially what Rand Paul was saying. And Tony Fauci is saying, well, we think, and well, you don't have any evidence, but yet you're going whole hog to recommend it and push it. I mean, really push it. And there's no evidentiary basis to do that. That's a problem. Or at least be honest about it so that people can make an informed decision based on what is known and what is not known, as opposed to what you're pretending to know that you don't. And there's been a lot of pretending to know but not knowing that's gone on over the last 2.5 years. And that's the crime. And that's where so much of this stuff has been exposed for folly. It was all my intuition is this, but it was presented as, well, this is science and data, and to ask questions or dispute it is to be, you know, some sort of neo-Luddite. No.
And can we play Governor DeSantis here? Because, I mean, he was taking heat, obviously, from left-leaning mainstream media because he didn't pre-order the COVID-19 shots for kids 6 months to 5 years old.
The risks outweigh the benefits, and we recommend against. That's not the same as banning it. I mean, people can access it if they want to, and parents can do. But if you look at when they were doing the hearing, you had one physician say, you know, parents are really, really frightened. Like, we know that the risk is low. We're not sure how this is going to work, but parents are really frightened about COVID for their kids. And which I would say is, why would they be frightened about it? It's because of media hysteria. Yep. It's because of a lot of misinformation. That's why they're scared. But to do an emergency use for a six-month-old or a one-year-old simply to placate anxiety, that's not the standard when you're doing this. The standard is this something that's safe and effective? And then very importantly for recommendations, does the benefit outweigh the risk? And so that's what you're looking at doing. But the state of Florida has had the recommendation from five and up for a while. We are the first state to do that. And now from the 6 month to five, the state's recommendation holds. It's a recommendation against doing it. That's different than saying you can't. You are free to choose. That's not an issue.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't love him anymore.
Bill Weir at CNN. 49 states have pre-ordered these COVID boosters. Guess which one didn't? And Christina Pushaw, who's DeSantis' spokesman, said, the one everyone's moving to.
Oh, hello.
Zing.
Zing, ding, 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 ding.
Chris and Carrie.
Hey, good morning, guys. I have three kids, 19, 17, and 12. And there's the two have been vaccinated because initially, early on, we thought, or they were under the impression that they wouldn't be able to go to school, and it was their decision. But since then, there is zero chance any of them will get vaccinated again. Even my 12-year-old, she hasn't hit puberty. I'm not even going to go anywhere close to a vaccine.
Thanks for the call, Chris. You know, I get a text from 630. Like resending a message they got from IDPH. IDPH records indicate that you or someone in your care are due for a COVID-19 shot.
I get those
for more information, please visit blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
tracking us.
Yeah, the push is on, that's for sure. But I just wonder, I'm sort of wondering, you know, how much attention most people are actually paying to this push and how much it informs any decision making with respect to children. John in Naperville.
Yeah, you know, please, everybody, please remember back to the campaign when Kamala Harris and Joe Biden all were on their high horse saying, I would not trust the Trump vaccine. I wouldn't trust the vaccine.
Right.
I mean, you want to talk about politicization if this thing is really, good to get? Listen to these morons.
Yeah, thanks for the call, John. Right, the Trump vaccine as if he was the one in the lab cooking it up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how silly these discussions were and to some extent continue to be. One other thing, though, between Fauci and Paul I wanted to get to because it got under Fauci's skin. And we talked about this a few weeks back when Open the Books was able to obtain significantly redacted information, but nonetheless information about royalties being paid to NIH employees. And you're talking about tens of millions of dollars to thousands of NIH employees. And so the question, the natural question is there agency capture that has occurred here? Do you have drug companies and other commercial interests paying NIH employees to do their bidding, essentially? And that would include Tony Fauci, which is where Rand Paul started.
The NIH continues to refuse to voluntarily divulge the names of scientists who receive royalties and from which companies. Over the period of time from 2010 to 2016, 27,000 royalty payments were paid to 1,800 NIH employees. We know that not because you told us, but because we forced you to tell us through the Freedom of Information Act. Over $193 million was given to these 1,800 employees. Can you tell me that you have not received a royalty from any entity that you ever oversaw the distribution of money in research grants?
Well, first of all, let's talk about royalty.
That's the question. No, that's the question. Have you ever overseen,
Senator,
have you ever received a royalty payment from a company that you later oversaw money going to that company?
You know, I don't know as a fact, but I doubt it.
Well, here's the thing is, why don't you let us know? Why don't you reveal how much you've gotten and from what entities? The NIH refuses.
Senator,
we ask them. We ask them. The NIH, we ask them whether or not, who got it and how much. They refuse to tell us. They sent it redacted. Here's what I want to know. It's not just about you. Everybody on the vaccine committee, have any of them ever received money from the people who make vaccines? Right. Can you tell me that? Can you tell me if anybody on the vaccine approval committees ever received any money from people who make the vaccines?
Soundbite number one, are you going to let me answer a question? Okay, so let me give you some information. First of all, according to the regulations, people who receive royalties are not required to divulge them, even on their financial statement, according to the Bayh-Dole Act. So let me give you some example. From 2015 to 2020, the only royalties I have was my lab and I made a monoclonal antibody for use in vitro reagent that had nothing to do with patients. And during that period of time, my royalties range from $21 a year to $700 a year, and the average per year was $191.46.
It's all redacted, and you can't get any information on the 1,800
Senator
scientists.
Paul, your time is
so
gone.
We want to know whether
Senator
or not
Paul.
People got money from the people who made the manufacturing.
Senator Paul,
vaccine.
Your time is long over expired.
Yeah, God forbid anybody get an answer to that question. So here's the thing about Tony Fauci's answer, first and foremost. Have you received royalties from any company that you've provided grant funding to, that you've overseen grant funding for? I don't know. I don't think so, but I'd have to check. You know, there's two things.
I mean, come on.
Well, there's two things. One is the regulations he was describing where you don't have to disclose royalties. That's a problem, and that needs to be changed, and that's where congressional oversight comes in and congressional action should be taken. So that's on Congress. I'll give him that. Or the agency to do that as, you know, an administrative level to ensure ethical standards are being abided. NIH and CDC could always do that too. But okay, so if that's nothing illegal, now the question is ethical. And, you know, sophisticated, I mean, 2015 to 2020. Yeah, you've been at NIH for 40 years. We want the full record. The idea that you don't know offhand tells me there is no conflict check protocol at the agency. Because you should know, you should be able to say, you know what, Senator, very careful to separate my private gain from the administration of taxpayer dollars. So there is a conflict check that is done to make sure I am not involved in any grant making or grant oversight from any company with from whom I've received compensation. Simple. And that's what it should be. Lawyers do conflict checks. These public health professionals should be doing conflict checks, too, especially when they're trading on their public position for private remuneration. And again, I understand that it's not illegal and maybe some of this is ethical and maybe some of it isn't. But it's clear that the safeguards are not in place to ensure that it is. And that's what Fauci inadvertently disclosed at that hearing yesterday.
This is the Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Illinois governor's race. And other races, if you want to expand the field. We've been bringing you over the last several weeks a lot of the Republican candidates for a lot of the Republican primaries for offices, both state and federal. We've got a few more congressional races at least to try to get in between now and a week from Tuesday. But I wanted to start with the governor's race. I saw this video posted by Mark Batnick, who's a state rep from Plainfield area.
Republican. Used to be a friend of the show.
I supported him. You know, I know there's some people that that don't like me and don't like the PAC work that I've done or that I'm currently doing or both, but some of them include people that have received support in the past. But you know, that's the nature of a Republican Party that's led by Quislings. That sort of traitorous attitude infects the party. Mark Batnick characterizes himself as a conservative. He's supporting Richard Irvin. He's part of the 30 Pieces of Silver caucus, as I like to call them. Supported Richard Irvin from the beginning, even knowing that Black Lives Matter was a Marxist organization.
Well, they knew. Someone's paying off somebody. I don't get it. But
and here's what Mark Batnick is offering to try to buttress Richard Irvin's flailing chances at the nomination. And by the way, here's the good news about the 30 Pieces of Silver caucus.
Yeah.
Nobody cares what their state rep thinks. Very few people. They don't. I mean, in fact,
a lot of people don't even know who their state rep is.
Well, of course. But I'm talking about like rank and file Republicans paying attention. Yeah. You know, the Mark Batnicks of the world don't have any coattails. And by the way, this is not new and it's not specific to this race. I remember trying to make this case to Steve Rauschenberger more than a decade ago when he was running for Senate and governor. You know, oh, you've got the endorsement of all these senators. Yeah, well, that doesn't matter. They don't have coattails. They may even be personally popular in their district, but nobody says, gosh, I'm thinking about the governor's race.
What would my state rep do?
Right. And part of it is that's just the nature of it. I mean, I'm sure, you know, family and friends,
close.
But generally speaking, they have, you know, they cannot move the needle, even as a group, as you're about to see on June 28th, more likely than not. But also, they don't have any coattails because they've destroyed their credibility over and over again. And so you'll have people default and say, yeah, I guess I like Mark and he votes right, so fine. But nobody is rushing to die on a hill for these people because they've demonstrated who they are. They're useful, or maybe as useful as people think they can obtain for the moment. But that's about it. Here's Batnick on Irvin.
My name is Mark Batnick. I'm a state rep for the 97th District. It's mainly based in Plainfield. A couple other towns in there. I don't have any residents actually in the town of Aurora, but I actually have a little bit of land in the town of Aurora, and my district borders the town of Aurora. Supporting Richard was pretty easy because of the good things that I've seen him do as a neighboring district, and more importantly, what all the residents of the town of Aurora have told me. I mean, bringing pride back to Aurora, bringing economic activity back to Aurora. The people that I trust and what I've seen firsthand is the transformation while he's been mayor has just been fantastic. So there's a lot of people that talk about doing things. There's really only one candidate in this race that's actually done it. It's why it was pretty easy to support Richard.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Bringing pride back to Aurora, if you mean the pride parade, that's one thing. Yeah, he brought that. But I don't know about pride more generally. Well, just to give you a counterpoint, I guess this is one of the Aurora residents that Mark Batnick didn't talk to. Rick Lawrence is a two-term alderman, City of Aurora, served with Irvin both on the city council and I believe for a time when he was mayor. Here's some of what he has to say about Richard Irvin's Aurora. How about we start with public safety since he's running around telling everybody what a tough prosecutor, law and order guy he is, the Black Lives Matter supporter.
The public safety under Richard Irvin actually has not improved. Our police are more hands-off now under Rich Irvin. During the riots, during Black Lives Matter situations, our police were told to stand down. 30 businesses or so plus burned or were looted or destroyed. So talking and speaking, I know a lot of police officers, their morale is not where it was.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could also text us at 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Rick Lawrence, who's a business owner in Aurora, also was involved in a lot of these development deals. And he'll give you chapter and verse if you're interested in finding out, you know, getting a broad sense of the performance on a range of topics as well as the character of the individual in question. But again, if you're just looking to play identitarian politics, then you're not going to ask those uncomfortable questions and you're not going to seek out opinions that run counter to the one you've concluded is in your best political interest to hold. And so that's what Mark Batnick and Keith Wheeler out in King County and these other quote-unquote conservative state legislators have done. Interestingly, I had an exchange with Mark Batnick about this after I saw that video he posted on Twitter.
Did you guys text each other or talk on the phone?
I texted. I texted him good luck on the 28th with a link to his statement that you just heard. He texted me back, "Ha, I'll have a great 28th. Ironically, or is it coincidentally, it just came from the Bailey stop in Oswego." I responded, "I think the word you're searching for is hypocritically." Not ironically, not coincidentally, hypocritically. He said, "No, that's the wrong word, but before you gloat too much, you should wait for November. Right now, you're a bridesmaid because of JB's $32 billion.
That he spent, on campaign ads?
$32 billion?
No.
No. Maybe he meant $3 billion as a typo. I don't know.
Or
maybe
$3
he doesn't
million?
Know. If we lose a close Supreme Court race or two because of underperformance, that will be the most damaging epic fail of this election. Wait a second. And by the way, Mark didn't say, like, this is off the record or something, so I feel free to relay this this private text exchange. Don't really care. Wait a second. I thought Mark, per the video, was making a principled stand because Irvin is a turnaround artist. He turned around Aurora. What's now I hear, wait a second, this is about a Supreme Court race or two because of your political prognostications about what turnout or a Bailey performance versus Pritzker would look like in a general election. So which is it? Is this a principled stand because Richard Irvin is a rising star in the Republican ranks and has the best chance to beat Pritzker? But again, one leading to the other. That this is a great candidate with a stellar record. And because of that, this is the sales pitch, and because of that, he's our best chance to beat Pritzker. And yet instead, I get back a cynical political argument based on projections he can't support with any evidence. This is the hackery that is afoot in the Republican Party and has been for a long time. It's this sort of fork-tongued legislator, I'm talking about Batnick, who's why we're in a super minority. I supported Batnick before. I won't make that mistake again. I mean, do you understand how dishonest these people are? Even the self-styled conservatives? Do you understand how compromised they are? Do you understand how weak, how pathetic, how visionless, how uncreative these poltroons parading themselves as Republicans in the state are? I know the question, can Darren Bailey unite the party after, or can, or whoever, could Jesse Sullivan unite the party after? Could Richard Irvin? Well, you know,
Richard Irvin's not going to support any Republican candidate.
Well, here's the thing. The base won't support the perpetrating of a fraud on them. You may have noticed, Mark Batnick and Keith Wheeler and other self-styled conservatives, we just had a fraud perpetrated on us 4 years ago. that's fresh in the minds of a lot of people who, you know, pay attention and regularly show up to vote in Republican primaries. I know we're supposed to forget that. I know we're supposed to forget the dishonest campaign that Ronner ran against Jeannie Ives that these same GOP quislings supported or were silent. Oh, I don't want to get involved. You know, I don't want to lose access to Ronner's checkbook. So keep it going. This is a coalition of the willing. So, yes, you want to bring as many people in as possible, and that will be the nominee's job. And I think more likely than not, the nominee is going to be Darren Bailey, as I've said. But it's not me saying it. It's the polling indicating that. And $50 million and all of these compromised, craven, self-styled conservatives falling in line, and you have a candidate who right now is enjoying about support from about one-fifth of the Illinois GOP primary electorate. So what does that say? Is there any self-reflection? What does that say about the candidate that you put up, the candidate you backed, the arguments you've had $50 million of money to put behind in order to make the case that you're making? How could that go so awry? Are you responsible at all anymore? Or not responsible, just like you were not responsible for, again, suborning a perjurious campaign by Bruce Rauner that led to a historic defeat. You want to talk about underperformance, a historic spread in defeat against J.B. Pritzker in 2018. You had your nominee trying to get out of the race in the summer of 2018.
Oh, that's right. You tried to find somebody to replace him.
Yeah.
Didn't he ask Todd Ricketts or something?
But regardless of the incompetence or the treachery, Mark Batnick is already telling me that he's conceding defeat. You wonder why we call them surrender Republicans.
They've already surrendered.
If there's an underperformance, then we could lose a Supreme Court race. So June 28th or June 29th, you're ready to just sit on your hands and hope we don't have an underperformance. I'm ready to blame Darren Bailey and Dan Proft and Bailey voters, if he's the nominee, for a loss in November. Oh, this is going to be an uphill battle in Illinois? Oh, you don't say. What great insight. Why is it an uphill battle in Illinois?
It shouldn't be.
As I said before, when did we ask the Communist Party of Cuba and the Communist Party of Venezuela and the Communist Party of China to dropship a bunch of communists to emigrate to Illinois? And that's what changed the balance of power here and made it this deep blue state. I don't think that ever happened. So something else happened. What actually happened is you, the Republican Party, the combine element, and these surrender conservatives were complicit in terrible public policy. Remember, you've had the Republican leader in the House put Republican legislators on Pritzker's doubling of the gas tax. That's just a couple years ago. Remember, you had 15 House Republicans and one Senate Republican vote for Rauner's permanent increase in the state income tax. That's just a few years ago. Just to give you two examples. On the fiscal side, since they, for you, let's focus on the fiscal. Oh, and what is our record on the fiscal to focus on? What is it that you have to offer? This is the worst governed state in American history by every fiscal metric. And here they are ready to say, if Darren Bailey loses a race that all of these Republicans in this primary are looking at probably a 1-in-3 shot of winning. I think it's improving a little because of what's happening nationally, but it's still an uphill battle. And everyone knew that going in. Now they're going to sit back. They're not going to participate. They'll probably provide aid and comfort to the enemy. And then they're going to say, see, we told you so. If Darren Bailey doesn't win. That's your Illinois Republican Party in terms of the leadership, in terms of the legislative caucuses. There are exceptions, but few. And most of them are found south of I-80, by the way. And maybe that has something to do with it, too. Because what you see happening in within the caucuses, to the extent there is positive change going on, is the balance of power is moving away from Chicagoland and moving south of I-80, where you actually have conservatives who want to put in the fight against political ruling class types, whether they be Chicago Democrats or surrender conservatives. And so they're losing their relevance to the extent they ever enjoyed any actual relevance beyond their little fiefdoms in the first place. It's despicable, and it needs to be called out, because if you can't be honest with yourselves within your own party of, you know, your own band erstwhile, then why should the general electorate believe you're going to be direct and honest with them? Why should they attach any credibility to your words? And that's a question that the Republican Party, again, at the leadership level, all of these apparatchiks you see doing the bidding of Ken Griffin's money, that's a question they never ask themselves. Because what would the answer be? Just as they never ask themselves the question of what do we win when we win? Because the answer is not a better state. These public policy advances, we win, I get to be a little bit more relevant. I get to have a little bit more power. Maybe I get to make a little bit more money. Another Aurora resident that Mark Batnick didn't get around to talking to. Nobody did, apparently. You know, I mean, it's difficult. It's difficult to find these people. Dan Heitz has been a real estate developer in Aurora, in downtown Aurora, by the way, for 20 years. I know. You know, it's funny how I can locate them, but they can't. Isn't it? Here's what Dan Heitz had to say about Richard Irvin's leadership during COVID. Does it matter what a mayor did during COVID? Does it matter to Republican primary voters? Does that say something about judgment and character?
And then also, too, don't be hoodwinked. I mean, he's lying to you about Aurora's the sixth safest city, blah, blah, blah. It's not. Violent crime up 40% since he became mayor.
Dan Heitz on Irvin and COVID.
Gone to restaurants where the local police and others had come in and told them if they don't shut down, we're going to close you down. That is what I would hold against him. He didn't stand up for the business people, the people of Aurora. He stood up for big government and big governor.
He stood up for big government and a big governor. But, you know, from Mark Batnick's perch in Plainfield, everything looks great in Aurora. Although he actually doesn't care because he's just playing political prognosticator. He fancies himself a bit of a political numbers guy. Yeah. We'll see if he likes the numbers on June 28th. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Our friend Eli Steele, the great documentarian, How Jack Became Black. Among other work, did a original for Fox News on Jody Shaw. Jody Shaw, that may ring a bell in the minds of some. This dates back a couple of years ago now, but she was an administrator at Smith College, one of those elite private universities northeast. And she ultimately, and you know, a dutiful woman of the left, as you're required to be, one of those elite private colleges in the Northeast. She was bounced, or bounced herself, combination of the two, from Smith because she couldn't endure the race hustle, the identitarianism that was consuming the campus. She's the subject and a encapsulation of her story, the subject of a piece that Eli Steele did for Fox News entitled The White Mask. Just listen to the intro for some context.
Rich white women, because you are white. If you are white and have ever accomplished anything in your life, it is not due to your hard work. It is due to the privilege of your white skin. I don't want to just hire 4 white people, you know what I mean? Maybe 2 white and 2 of color, something like that. Dear white people, this is what we want you to do. It's time to acknowledge that the work of anti-racism is white people's work. Hello, thank you for signing up to participate in the White Accountability Group for staff and faculty. Whiteness can be hard for white people to acknowledge, and the self-victimization of white people is extremely harmful for Black people and people of color. It is our responsibility, especially those of us who are white, to do better, to do more. These are just a few of the many things I heard while I was working as a staff member at Smith College.
Are you just a white person, or are you Jody Shaw?
Well, I used to think I was just Jody Shaw, and then I started working at Smith, and I started to think of myself more and more as a white person.
And by the way, Jody Shaw, also a graduate of Smith College. USA Today, a op-ed by Ibram Kendi, a.k.a. Henry Rogers. Republicans help maintain racism by undermining critical race theory in public education. I appreciate it. The argument is so prosaic. We've talked enough about Mr. Kendi that you understand this is regurgitation of the hustle that he gets paid a lot of money by corporate America to do. But I appreciate the fact that he continues to perpetuate this hustle because I want this fight. We should want this fight. With intellectual frauds like Kendi, we should absolutely want this fight, and it should in part frame decisions that are made this November and beyond. For more on this subject and others, please be joined by Paul Kenger, professor of political science at Grove City College in Grove City, PA, contributor to the American Spectator and author of The Devil and Karl Marx, Communism's Long March of Death, Deception, and Infiltration. Paul, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Dan and Amy. Thanks for calling me in once again for another wonderful topic.
Yeah, well, Jody Shaw's case got some attention before this Eli Steele piece a couple years back because she spoke out and she was essentially speaking from inside the castle, which is always interesting, and as a woman of the left. But she just couldn't abide the CRT lies anymore. And then this intro, which I thought was very effective, her just recitating all of the things that the examples of the things that are said and instructed on the campus at Smith College. There's no give here with respect to these identitarians and critical theory studies at the collegiate level that has now moved down to the K-12 level. I mean, just because there more attention is being paid and some school board members and some governors have lost their public offices doesn't mean there's any give in the academy.
Yeah, and you know what? And what Jody Shaw described there, right? I mean, that whole rich white woman thing—that's just full of stereotyping, bigotry, racism, and frankly, poison. Right? you're not a person. You are not an individual. You're certainly not somebody made in the image of God, the Imago Dei. You are a color. And your color defines you. And so she said when she first got there, she thought of herself as, you know, Jody Smith. And then she had to be brainwashed. She had to be brainwashed in understanding that, no, you are not Jody Smith. You are not an individual with your own unique ideas. You are in a category. We will stereotype you. Stereotype, stereotype, stereotype. You are rich. You are white. You are a woman. So you think like this. And this is exactly exactly the kind of thing that we were always told that you should never do. That was bigotry. That was racism. That was stereotyping. But now, and people like Ibram Kendi and others, Martin Luther King Jr., and even people like Ronald Reagan. Right now, I'm writing about Ronald Reagan and race. That they told us to be colorblind, and now these individuals are saying, no. That's the ideology of colorblindness. That is bad. That is wrong. You are not supposed to be colorblind. So really, Dan, you're supposed to be color obsessed. You're supposed to look at everybody's color, and the color defines you. It's a very demeaning way to look at people. It's not how Americans should look at people. It's not how Christians should look at people. That this is what the modern crazy cultural revolutionaries in the American Academy, this is what they've wrought, and it's now everywhere. And in this month of June, they're doing it according to sex and gender. That's the identity du jour right now.
What about
it's really disgusting.
Grove City College, where you're at, I understand to be one of the few outliers in higher education. But I wonder if even a school like Grove City has had these moments or has had to beat back some of these hustlers like Kendi and or administrators like you find at Smith College.
Well, yeah. In fact, you probably read about it. So we had some experiences with this over the last year, and it'd probably take me an entire show to go through all of it. But yeah, I tell people all the time. I mean, this has so saturated the culture that you're not going to find any college or any place where there aren't pockets of this, right? And I mean, we've had, speaking of the Pride in the month of June, we've had students on campus who've tried to start, like a gay pride official club on campus. This is happening at all the different colleges. But Biola on the West Coast has been through this. Closer to you guys, I'm not sure what's going on at Wheaton, but they probably had moments like this too. And we've had the whole CRT issue. This is a battle too among different faculty members over how do you define critical race theory. And to be fair, I should point out, there will be people who will say, well, critical race theory is really just a legal theory, right? And you're kind of misusing it. You're creating it as a sort of umbrella term to capture all the goofy stuff that's happening on race, like what Jody Shaw, right? Is her name?
Yeah,
Jody Smith.
Right, Jody Shaw.
Yeah, Jody Shaw, like what Jody Shaw described. And that's probably largely true, right? If you go back and you read through Bell and Ken Shaw and Delgado and so forth. I mean, I've been reading critical race theory for a long time. It comes from critical legal theory, critical theory. And a lot of it is this really esoteric kind of screwball legal mumbo jumbo that just doesn't make any sense at all. It's become sort of an umbrella term for a lot of the other stuff that's going on. Like a lot of what Ibram Kendi is doing and others, is it even necessarily critical race theory, or is it just something else that's really more disturbing on the issue of race? And that's a good point. But either way, what Jody Shaw is describing, that's the new zeitgeist in so many colleges across the country. And imagine sending your kid to Smith College for, I don't know, what's the tuition there, Dan? $70,000 a year, I would bet.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm sure it's a minimum of $50,000. And you have your kid at home all these years, maybe send him or her to a Christian school, private school, maybe homeschool them. You've taught them all these different things. And then in 4 years, you fork over $200,000-$300,000 to a bunch of ideological revolutionaries to undo everything that you taught. If people listening now, just say no. Don't do it. Be very careful about where you send your kids to school.
Now, you wrote in your article at spectator.org about pride and flags and how when you drove 220 miles outside from any big city, you didn't see any gay pride flags. But here in Chicago, outside of Chicago, in Batavia, it's a suburb of Chicago, four pride flags were stolen, and now they've opened up a hate crime investigation.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't make this stuff. There's no victims here, but that's what they're doing.
check the superintendent's office.
Right. Yeah, that'll give them even more reasons to put up more flags. And I was in D.C. the last two or three days. I was in Old Town Alexandria yesterday in Northern Virginia, which is now run by Democrats. And the entire county courthouse, the whole area, the whole square there was just absolutely adorned with gay pride flags. And when I drove last weekend from here in Grove City, Pennsylvania, kind of western Pennsylvania, we're about 30 minutes from Ohio, we're very close to Ohio, and drove up to Emporium, Pennsylvania, where my Uncle Bruno's funeral was up there. He was 96 years old, great guy. And I drove through all these different small towns, and I didn't see a single gay pride flag anywhere. And what I instead saw, and I don't know if you two are seeing this, Dan and Amy, maybe when you get out of Chicago and out farther into more rural areas, but there are now in these small towns, and I saw it literally in every single small town that I went through, that there are flags on lampposts that are banners of military soldiers, people who are from those hometowns. And I started seeing this a few years ago, usually around Memorial Day, and they would stay up until July 4th. Now I'm seeing them up all year round. And it used to be like on a lamppost in town, you would have one banner, right? Here's Joe Smith, who fought in World War II, date of birth, date of death. And now there will be two banners on each lamppost, one on each side. And in some places, four. And I saw in towns like Brockway, St. Mary's, Pennsylvania, I saw six of these. You know, six faces on each flagpole. The one town, Kersey, 2 miles out, it's such a tiny town, I guess they didn't have enough lampposts. They started putting them on telephone poles about 2 miles out of town. And so in these little rural small towns, that, you know, that's what they're remembering. But as soon as you go into any liberal enclaves, any big cities, there are no remembrances at all of their military soldiers. They're just thinking about sex, 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 gender, yeah. gender.
There is,
right?
There,
I mean, the military is not even on their radar.
No, right. And as we know, what a society extols, it begets. There is some additional pushback. This is an interesting story out of Worcester, Mass. A Catholic school called the Nativity School was flying the LGBTQ plus pride flag as well as the Black Lives Matter flag, wouldn't take the flags down. So the bishop there said, well, you can no longer bear the name Catholic then. And it seems
well,
to
and
me,
he should. But listen, they have to do, Dan, is grab their catechism and look up the word pride. It's described as one of the seven deadly sins.
Well, man,
right?
Good point. Yes.
It's condemned. Augustine said it was pride that changed angels into devils, right? In the rule of Saint Benedict, but you know, monks had to shun pride. That was the first thing that had to go in order for them to strive for virtue, right? Pride cometh before the fall, says the scriptures, right? It was Satan's pride that brought death into the world, that expelled humanity from paradise. Paradise lost, as Milton put it.
Right.
Pride is the first and worst of the seven deadly sins. Now, the LGBTQ people listening to this right now that don't like what I'm saying, all right, it's not my fault that's the name of your month and of your motto and your creed. Do not expect me to celebrate pride. You don't celebrate pride. Now, okay, I'm sure you mean something other than what you know, the seven deadly sins means by pride. Fine, then change your motto, right? But you cannot be a Catholic school that teaches kids about the cardinal virtues, the theological virtues, vice, virtue, and everything else, and elevate and celebrate pride. You don't celebrate pride. Period.
No, we should celebrate humility, but that's in short supply as well. I think too, you know, to your point about this, which is a good one. You know, it seems to me the real vacancy here is from faith leaders, and people who consider themselves faithful. In response to politicians, you had Nancy Pelosi appear on that show that RuPaul hosts, you know, where men dress up like women and say, you know, drag queens are what makes America great. Dana Nessel, who's the attorney general for the state of Michigan, had a speech last week commemorating Pride Month. Drag queens make everything better. Drag queens are fun. A drag queen for every school. And we don't need school. We don't need school resource officers in every school. We need drag queens in every school, according to the Michigan Attorney General. And in response to that, you hear from very few people who are not sort of cultural conservatives writing columns for conservative outlets.
Yeah, yeah. And they're not reading Dante, Milton, or certainly the Bible, right? They're reading critical race theory, and they're going to drag queen story hour. And this is why, you know, to sort of bring this back, you mentioned my book on Marx when you introduced me. You know, this is why Marxists, people like Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels, and others, realize in order to advance their radical human nature transforming ideology, they had to purge religion. They had to get the Bible out. They had to get these ideas out. And to go further along, more recent American history in colleges, we used to require courses on Western Civ. And the Cultural Revolutionaries chanted, right, Jesse Jackson, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western Civ has got to go. Well, they've gotten rid of Western Civ, so they're not reading Dante. They're not reading Milton. So the things that I'm saying here in this interview about theological considerations about pride would hit these millennials in the face. They're probably screaming at their radio, what in the world is he talking about? This is bigotry. No, it's basic theology. This is the kind of stuff that we've always known. But if you can purge all of that and get people not to read it and not to even know about it, then when some guy comes on your radio and starts quoting, you know, Milton and the scriptures and Dante and the catechism, you just think the guy's a raving bigot and a lunatic. What's this guy talking about? This isn't what I learned in school in the last couple years. No, unfortunately, it's not. It's a mess.
He is Paul Kanger, professor of political science at Grove City College in Grove City, PA, contributor to the American Spectator, author of The Devil and Karl Marx, Communism's Long March of Death, Deception, and Infiltration. Paul, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. ExxonMobil responded to the letter that President Biden sent to the oil and gas companies questioning their patriotism. We've been in regular contact with the administration to update the president and his staff how ExxonMobil has been investing more than any other company to develop U.S. oil and gas supplies. This includes investments in the U.S. of more than $50 billion over the past 5 years, resulting in almost 50% increase in our U.S. production of oil during this period. Globally, we've invested double what we've earned over the past 5 years, $118 billion on new oil and gas supplies compared to the net income of $55 billion. This is a reflection of the company's long-term growth strategy and our commitment to continuously invest to meet society's demand for our products. Specific to refining capacity in the U.S., we've been investing through the downturn to increase refining capacity to process U.S. light crude by about 250,000 barrels per day, the equivalent of adding a new medium-sized refinery. We kept investing even during the pandemic when we lost more than $20 billion and had to borrow more than $30 billion to maintain investment to increase capacity to be ready for post-pandemic demand. Longer term, government can promote investment through clear and consistent policy that supports U.S. resource development, such as regular and predictable lease sales, as well as streamlined regulatory approval and support for infrastructure such as pipelines. Well, they could do that. But, hey, you just worry about what we tell you to worry about. You don't worry about what we're doing. And certainly you don't tell us what you need to make it make more sense for you to increase capacity and production. And it might, you know, and this is like not flacking for ExxonMobil, which, like most Fortune 100 companies, I find generally objectionable because of their political leftism and their rent-seeking behavior. But I mean, the facts are the facts when it comes to what the company's actually done and the impact of the policies that have actually been advanced by this administration, something that they don't want to confront. And to the extent they're forced to by Peter Ducey, but the maybe along with Phil Wegman, but the only members of the press corps that have firing synapses, KJP, the quadruple threat, Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House spokesperson, is the least equipped available to answer them. She was pressed by Ducey on both inflation and energy production.
Why is the president saying that inflation is worse everywhere but here?
Because what we have seen across the globe, first of all, inflation is a global challenge, as we have said. It is caused by clearly the pandemic, this once in a generation pandemic that we are coming out of, and also most recently the war that that Putin started in Ukraine that has caused inflation. As we look at food and as we look at gas prices.
Putin in the pandemic, but follow up. Yeah, it's everywhere because modern monetary theorists and control of central banks are everywhere in the Western world. But it's not everywhere to the extent it is here. So what Joe Biden said, the big guy, was just factually incorrect.
And also,
I did look globally, though. He says that inflation is worse everywhere but here. That's not true. U.S. has worse inflation than Germany, France, Japan, Canada, India, Italy, Saudi Arabia.
Well,
so why is he saying that?
I think what we are saying is that when you talk about inflation, it is a global thing. And it is not just about the United States. This is something that everyone is feeling because of coming out of a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, because of the war that Russia has started in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And on oil and gas production, what about that? What about what Exxon had to say, essentially? More drilling? And you know, policies that promote investment, new refineries.
We have to drill more here in the U.S., though.
Because we don't need to do that. What we need them to do is, with the oil that's out there, we need them to refine that oil so that the capacity could go up and then prices would go down, okay, inherently go down.
And so I know the president once said that he was going to end fossil fuel. Is that now off the table?
No, we are going to continue to move forward with our clean energy proposal, our climate change proposal.
Yeah, keep going. Nothing's wrong here.
Nope.
Stick to the plan.
Stay
Lie
the course.
Lie to the media. Stay the course.
Stay the course. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by economist and GovZilla author, Steve Moore. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, good morning, folks. I don't think I can. I'm totally confused.
What are you talking about? No more drilling. No more refineries, but
right.
just make more. Give us more.
You know, really, I mean, which is it, Mr. President? During the campaign, you know, in that famous moment in the debate against Trump, he famously said, "I want to close down American oil and gas." Remember that? And he said many, many times that he wants to take oil and gas development and consumption in the United States down to zero over the next 20 years. But now, all of a sudden, he's the biggest fan of the oil and gas industry, except for the fact that he wants to impose these price controls on them, and now they're talking about windfall profits tax. Yeah, this is extraordinarily frustrating. I mean, the fact is, if Trump were president today, we would probably be producing about 4 million more barrels a day. Right now we're at 11. We should be at about 15 million barrels a day. That was actually what was the projection that we had in the Trump administration. And at $120 a barrel, there's no question we'd be there. And you increase the supply of something, its price goes down. She has that right. And if you decrease the supply of something, its price goes up. Look, the pandemic, did that contribute to the high gas price today? Well, let me think. Okay, the day Donald Trump left office, which was right when the COVID crisis was coming to an end, the price of oil was $60 a barrel, not $110 a barrel, and the price of gas at the pump was $2.49 a barrel, a gallon. Now the price is what are you paying there? $5.15, $5.20 a gallon. I mean, look, this is one
last. I wish I was paying $5.15 a gallon.
Yeah, let me just say this loud and clear. I've said it many times. The left and Joe Biden want high gas prices because they don't want you to use it, right? They don't want oil and gas, so they, of course, the best way to get people to stop using something is keep raising its price. But this is part of the master plan. And now to say, oh, we want to bring gas prices down is incredibly hypocritical and untruthful.
Well, I mean, what they could, you know, what are they going to do? Because the oil industry said that the Biden White House has been hostile since it decided to go green and six refineries have gone offline to meet these new environmental standards. They could just drop them.
Yeah. Amy, let me put it like this. If somebody put a gun to an industry's head and said, we want to kill you, would you invest in that industry?
Yeah.
You know, it's unbelievable that they're saying, oh, my gosh. And, you know, now they're even making money. I don't know. I'm really frustrated. I think the U.S. economy is tanking right now. I think we are in a, I don't think there's any question. We are in a recession right now. It's not, will it come? The recession is here. We've lost $11 trillion in the stock market in the last 3 months, $11 trillion. I've been talking to people who are, major investors and people who run venture firms. And they said starting in beginning of June, just all investment capital fell to zero. You're seeing a collapse now in housing. You're seeing a collapse in manufacturing. You're seeing a collapse in small business. This is a true catastrophe. And I got to tell you guys one quick funny story. On Tuesday, I testified before the House Budget Committee because, you know, the Democrats run the hearings because Pelosi is the speaker. And they had a hearing. I honest God's truth, you can look it up. You know what the title of the hearing was?
What?
How Joe Biden saved the economy.
And other fallacies. A children's book.
Yeah, it does sound like a children's book.
My testimony was just one word. What? Really?
You know, but how did he do it? I want to know the answer. I don't know it.
Oh, my God. If it had not been for that $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, boy, we'd be in a lot of trouble today. Thank God. Woo, thank God we dodged that bullet.
Well, what about the feds? I mean, raising interest rates again, because now we're going to have to pay higher mortgage rates, can't get a car loan now, and higher credit card rates. How is that going to – can you just walk me through this, how this is going to, you know, stop the surge of inflation?
Well, I think that there's two people responsible for this catastrophe, and it is a catastrophe. One is Joe Biden and his radical left-wing progressive ideology. And the second person is Jerome Powell, who is completely behind the curve on this. I've been saying for, 10 months on the show, the Fed has got to raise rates to extinguish this inflation. They let it go from 3% to 5% to 8%, now 9%. The producer price indexes are growing at 11%. I mean, this is just a redux of what happened under Jimmy Carter. And now you're right, Amy, we're starting to see mortgage rates. Now I think in some markets have hit 6%. Uh-huh. They were at, 3% just a year ago. That means buying a new house, the cost of that over your 30-year mortgage is like $100,000.
Well, and to your point, talked to a big mortgage broker in Chicago, and he said, in terms of, and that's a volume business, as you well know, he's off 60%, 60% in terms of demand.
And it's going to get worse because the rates are rising pretty quickly now.
I heard it's going to go to 8% for a 30-year fixed.
So, it very well might. Look, you know, people asked me yesterday, what do we do to, you know, what would be the first thing we could do to end this recession? Well, maybe if we could get Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to resign, that would help. I don't know. It's a very frightening situation. And the problem is that if you listen to the White House, if you listen to Joe Biden, I don't even know who the White House, economic spokesman is today, but they keep doubling down. They're still saying, gee, wouldn't it be better if we passed the Build Back Better bill, that $3 trillion spending bill? Can you imagine?
Thank God for Joe Manchin.
Well, let me get your opinion at whether this is their game. You know, what they're touting is the low unemployment number, and that's what they're banking on. And so they're not going to be as aggressive as they on inflation as perhaps the Fed needs to be. And they're going to continue to promote printing and spending funny money to prop up the jobs market, because if they lose that jobs number, then they have nothing.
Well, first of all, you're right. This has been, over the last year, it is true, this has been the strongest jobs market I've seen in my lifetime. And so that has been the one incredibly positive thing in the economy. Here's the bad news. Starting in late May, early June, the hiring just completely froze. So my advice to people, if you're on the sideline thinking about maybe getting a job, I would get it right away, because the last month's jobs market, that's the last good jobs report we're going to get for a long time. I think you're going to see a collapse in hiring. Look at, you know, the Wall Street Journal just last week cited about 25 major companies that are now either freezing employment or laying off workers. Small businesses, which are the ones, as you guys know, small businessmen and women hire 60% of the workers. The NFIB just declared that the confidence that the small businessmen and women have in the economy right now is as low as it's been in years. So I don't know. It just feels like the wheels are coming off.
He is Steve Moore, economist and GovZilla author. Steve, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
All right. See you guys. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too, and happy Father's Day. And he joined us on our turnkey.
He finds that humorous.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The 911 call that was made by Kim Fox's husband, Kelly Fox, has now been released. And here's what he said when he called 911.
911, what is the city of your emergency?
Frostmore.
And what's going on there?
A domestic issue.
Okay. Is it you or someone else?
My wife and I.
Okay. Is it physical or just verbal?
Physical.
Is anybody injured?
No, not yet.
Okay, any weapons?
Don't touch me.
Anybody touch me? Get out. Sorry, are there any weapons in the house?
No.
Okay, anybody been drinking tonight?
No.
Okay, what's your last name and what's your name? Okay. I do have them coming over here. Are you guys outside, inside?
Again?
Are you guys outside or inside?
We're outside. There's a car phone in
there. You said you see the police?
I do.
Okay, I'll let you go speak with them.
Thanks.
The most telling part, is anybody injured? No, not yet. Because remember, we had somebody call into our show and say, you know, he probably called the police because he was worried what he would do. You know, because she hit him and allegedly hit him, and if he'd fight back, so. I don't know.
The most selling part is that he has a car phone, not a cell phone. Is it a bag phone that you're using, sir? So I know he wants his game controller back, but the real issue here is that he alleged, and it's contained in the police report, that she slapped the video game controller out of his hand and that she slapped him, and. She was, according to the police report, she was there listening to him tell police that, and she agreed with that characterization. So that's a battery.
Right. Why didn't she go to jail?
Why wasn't she arrested and taken to jail? Because that's certainly what would have happened if the roles were reversed. Mm-hmm. And the response from both Kim and Kelly Fox is, this is a private matter. Please respect our family's privacy. No, it's not a private matter. You're the Cook County State's attorney. The police were called. The police responded. A battery was alleged. A battery was confessed to. And Cook County residents, the public, has a right to know whether or not the Cook County State's attorney is above the law.
Well, clearly she is.
And I also want to know whether Kelly Fox ever got his video game controller back.
And I want to know why grown men still play video games.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by investigative reporter Michael Volpe. He writes at Michael Volpe, V-O-L-P-E, michaelvolpe.substack.com. And he also has an issue with respect to the treatment of domestic violence. This is as it pertains to the case of Venkatesh Bogareddy, who in 2018 was arrested for a domestic, and subsequent to the dismissal of those charges, he was involved in a murder-for-hire plot where he tried to hire a confidential informant he didn't know to kill his ex-wife's uncle because his ex-wife's uncle was siding with his wife in their divorce proceeding. And he also said to this undercover agent that he would revisit hiring this person to kill his now ex-wife after the uncle had been done in. Michael Volpe, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. And actually what he said about his ex-wife is, if I go and kill her now, it's going to be too obvious I did it. So let's wait a while, get the divorce settled, and then we'll revisit it. But as far as Kim Fox is concerned, he, in 2018, his ex-wife, Usha, she went, I think there's four police reports, everything from rape, theft, and then violation of a protective order that she filed that turned into police reports. He was arrested just for the violation of a protective order, and that, I think, happened in late 2018. And by April of 2019, it just got dismissed. And I asked the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, and they basically told me, go look at the files at the building downtown. And I was like, well, I did look at the files. I want to understand why this happened, not the actual files I'm looking at. And then when I asked Venkatesh's attorney who represented him, Mike Clancy, he just said, well, I must be that good a lawyer. And one thing people should understand, so he was arrested for the murder for hire in May, I think, of 2019. So that was being plotted just as these other charges were swirling around him. So that's how brazen he was, and he must have known that he had nothing to worry about as far as the charges from the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. But this is a very dangerous guy, and I believe many of the crimes that he's alleged to commit that are police reports to the Chicago cops probably are still within the statute of limitations. And for some reason, they only charged him with one. He spent one night in jail, and then it just quietly disappeared. And the murder for hire plot, he approached a person who became a confidential informant. They then put in an undercover. But if he had approached someone else, or that confidential informant, rather than going to law enforcement, went to a hitman, his wife's ex-wife's uncle probably would be dead. So, and that wouldn't have happened if the Cook County State's Attorney's Office had taken seriously the crimes that were being alleged in 2018. I went to a rally in 2019 after the Jussie Smollett thing, and a lot of cops told me that this was their complaint in general with Kim Fox's office, that they would bring cases, solid cases, and she'd either plead them down or not even prosecute them. And they felt that a lot of their efforts were being wasted on very dangerous criminals who the Cook County State's Attorney's Office just refuses to prosecute.
But
Go ahead.
Well, no, why do you think she is so soft on crime? What's her goal, like to empty out the prisons?
I think, well, yeah, she's a George Soros, like in that style prosecutor, that the system is corrupt, the system targets people, and we need a fair system. But there's an article in one of the patches about this guy, Venkatesh, and it has an affidavit, and it was the ATF that did the investigation on the murder for hire for whatever reason. But it's a long affidavit. This is a very, very, very dangerous person. He multiple times met with the undercover. He paid him to go to, I think, New Jersey or wherever the uncle happened, they thought was to scout, to figure things out. This was a very in-depth plot. This was not like were using trapped, and he said just the right amount of things for them to arrest him. He was dead serious on killing his ex-wife's uncle, wanted to kill his ex-wife, and a year before that, he had allegedly committed theft, rape of his ex-wife, violated a protective order. And look, people who violate protective orders are often very, very dangerous because that's a very brazen act. If there's an order saying you're supposed to stay away and you just ignore it, and you get away with that, of course you're going to escalate.
What is this?
What
does his ex-wife say about how the violation of the protective order was handled by the Cook County State's Attorney's Office?
Not just that, all of them. She thinks that she basically thinks there's a cover-up. She is flabbergasted and afraid. He's sitting in a federal prison right now, but he hasn't even been sentenced yet. And she believes they're going to give him a slap on the wrist for the crime he's been convicted of, and he's going to wind up back in her life and finish the job. Because the whole system, and that includes child custody, because he, from prison right now, is trying to get custody time regularly, and the court seems to be going along with it. But from the Chicago police to the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, even the federal prosecutors, and certainly family court as well, she feels like they've been catering to this guy. And there's no logical reason for anyone to cater to Venkatesh Bogireddy. So whatever the reason, it's got to be nefarious.
You know, maybe it's just her attitude towards domestics, including her own. We got talking about this. We got a tweet from a police officer saying, in 30 years as an officer, we arrested every single time an open admittance like this happened in the Fox matter. Every single time, regardless of victims' wishes. So you know the police report, you heard the 911 call, and you know that there was no arrest made, and Kim Fox is trying to make it a private matter, and nobody in the Chicago press corps seems to want to press her on that. Your reaction to that and your sense from talking to officers maybe more generally about how the Cook County State's Attorney's Office looks specifically at domestic abuse claims?
Well, first of all, it's definitely not a private matter. Every police report is subject to FOIA. So that's just as absurd an argument as you're going to get. That everything that was released was released after properly following the law. So the idea that someone can call the police, leave a phone message like you heard and file a police report and you go, hey, this is a private matter, respect our privacy. Come on. Even if she was just a private person, it still wouldn't be a private matter. And she's the top prosecutor in our county. So that's ridiculous. I don't know that I ever asked cops, because this was a few years ago before this came out, specifically about domestic abuse, but definitely cops were very frustrated that they were bringing cases that should be prosecuted that weren't prosecuted. That they, more than one at the rally, said Smollett basically was like the straw that broke the camel's back. That there was a lot of pent up frustration with a lot of cases that don't get press coverage. That one cop or the other was bringing to the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, that they either were undercharging in the cop's view or not charging at all. And this with Venkatesh is the same thing. But what's unbelievably nefarious is he was accused of all kinds of very serious things. He only gets charged with one thing. It quietly goes away. And then the feds step in, and you would think as the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, maybe you revisit it after the feds stepped in May 2019 and then charge him then. He's very dangerous. Specifically to OSHA and her uncle and her entire family, but to everyone. If you're willing to kill your ex-wife, the mother of your children, you're not going to be willing to kill some random person. You want to do as much as possible to keep that guy in jail for as long as possible. Rape, all of the things that he was accused of in 2018 carry very long sentences. So if you go charge him now, you could prosecute him. And after he's done serving the federal time, he goes serves the state time. He'll never get out. But that doesn't seem to be the attitude they're taking. The attitude they're taking is to cater to this guy. And I don't think he's the only one.
Fox Chicago talked to a source, an unnamed source, in her office, in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, who basically said, you know, and this is coming from an assistant state's attorney, so it's ostensibly, so it's sort of depressing. It's not just Kim Fox that you know, has succumbed to this mentality. Basically, the source said, yeah, probably nothing happened. I've learned that when a machine Democrat gets in trouble, usually nothing happens. And we saw what it took to bring Veneco to justice, and that justice was decidedly imperfect. from police and prosecutors that you talk to? I mean, is that your sense of what they concede is the culture? And are you in agreement with that source that likely we'll see nothing happen here?
I'm not going to predict what's going to happen with Kim Fox, because if there's enough media attention, it can change the dynamic on anything. Definitely, I don't know that I've talked to cops recently, but in 2019, that was definitely the case. So unless she's changed the dynamic in the last 3 years, they don't bring charges that often. As far as her own situation, look, we'll see. This is getting a lot of attention. So that can change the dynamic on anything. As far as the Vinicius, he did 60 days. He sucker punched a kid and the kid died.
Yeah, right.
He did 60 days in jail.
Right. No, I mean, that's, you can understand where that sort of capitulation comes from, because you see enough instances like this. I mean, look, we're waiting for Ed Burke and Mike Madigan to go to trial, particularly Ed Burke. He was indicted in 2019. Mm-hmm. So you can understand the cynicism about the system. And I don't mean from the perspective of Kim Fox. He is Michael Volpe. He's an investigative journalist. He writes at Michael Volpe, VOLPE.substack.com. Michael Volpe, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It's time for Open Mic Friday. Lines are open. Taking your calls. 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA. Turnkey.pro text line. Comments, compliments, criticisms, general correct pottery. We'll take it all, and I have something I'd like to start with.
And if you want to say Happy Father's Day early to your dad.
You can do that, too.
Yeah, we're here for you. Yes, what do you want to get off your chest?
Kamala Harris, fresh off solving the root causes of Northern Triangle migration to the southern border, is taking on a new challenge.
Oh, what's her job responsibilities now?
And I know people struggle to listen to her, but there's a reason to this rhyme. Kamala Harris heading up an online harassment task force and introducing that by the way yesterday. It was sort of funny. It's like a roundtable discussion, like a conference room. You know, it's like people at like a 45 degree angle, two tables at a 45 degree angle. And yet she's in the corner with a podium and teleprompter to deliver remarks rather than just speaking like a human being off the cuff to the whatever policymakers or flax in attendance. Anyway, she offered this.
A harm against her, against him, against them is a harm against all of us as a society. And so it is with that spirit that we are doing the work we are doing today to convene and to inaugurate this task force. Understand?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to hear that much. See, the thing about Kamala, there's been a lot of good impersonators of Trump. There's a lot of good impersonators of Biden. But there haven't been a lot of good impersonators of Kamala Harris. And I found one on TikTok. So you just heard from Kamala. Now hear from TikTok Kamala. See what you think.
If you wake up, okay, and don't want to smile, if it takes a little while, okay, listen. Open your eyes, okay, and look at the day, okay? You gotta look at the day, you do. And listen, you'll see things in a different way, okay?
She's good.
Listen, full stop. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Okay, don't stop, because it'll soon be here, okay? It'll soon be here. It'll be here better than before. Okay, yesterday's gone. Okay, it's gone. And listen, full stop, it is gone. Yeah.
Oh, my. Oh, she's
powerful
perfect.
Words from both Kamalas.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty good.
Really good.
All right. Paul Warrenville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, hey, look, I got a text just the other day on my phone. It says, IDPH, Illinois Department of Public Health, records indicate that you or someone in your care are due for a COVID-19 shot. For more info, please visit, and they give a website.
Mm-hmm.
So how did they get my info? Are they after me? I mean, I only did the first two shots. I didn't do the boosters. So what's going on here?
Well, that's it.
That's it. When you put in there, didn't you put your phone number? You gave them your phone number.
No, I haven't gone to the website at all. I'm not going to this thing.
Yeah, you don't have to. That's just, you know.
Well, Paul. You just conceded in public that you haven't gotten your booster. I would expect a knock at your door in 3, 2.
No big deal.
Yeah.
No.
All right. Thanks for the call, Paul. Yeah, we mentioned that earlier in the show. I guess these text messages have been going out for some time.
Well, and then I get one for each of my kids because I didn't give them my kids' phone numbers.
Uh-huh.
I have my own, so I get pinged a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're not boosted.
Yeah.
They're not going to get boosted.
Right. In Soviet Illinois, shots shoot you.
Yeah.
Jabs jab you. Bob Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Always good talking to you. Another good week of discussions. But let me offer the following. Though, as you probably know, I'm retired. I still get up at 5 a.m. to listen to you guys to stay informed of the issues. My friends think I'm a bit crazy to get up this early, but I want to be informed and don't want to be blinded by the propaganda coming out of our fake news media. You offer some quality discussions, like even today. Finally, if I've done the numbers correctly, I think we still have about 140 weeks of this national nightmare called the Biden administration. That's January 20th, 2024. It's going to be still difficult to live through this. I took a look at my 401k. That's what I live off of.
You're not enjoying
not
the
good.
Numbers. Yeah, you're not enjoying those numbers either. All right, Bob.
So have a good weekend.
Thanks, Bob.
Have a good weekend.
We're putting you in charge of the countdown clock. All right, very good. Thanks for the call, Bob. Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Hey, guys, good morning. Yeah, all those are good comments so far this morning. We all know Kim Fox is a disgrace, right? We all know that. I mean, we know the press won't cover it. I don't know if the electorate knows that.
She got reelected
60-40. I was just going to say the same. But to me, that's the end of the story. I don't want to hear that lady anymore. My state's attorney friend says the same thing about the office. It's the culture. And, you know, we don't have a lot of hope that, you know, you know the law, Dan, so you know what should happen. We all do. But these people escape all the time. Kim Foxes of the, you know, of our government escape. So my last comment is I just want to recommend to all of these political junkies out here. I mean, we listen loyally to you because we know we're going to, like Bob just said, we're going to get the right story and then we're going to know what we're talking about out there. That's a good thing. But take breaks from the news. Take care of your own mental health. Take care of the ones you love. Take care of your dads. And that's what Tucker Carlson says every night when he signs off, and it gives me a little bit of solace. So I'm doing it, and I think I'm a lot calmer, don't you think?
Yeah, I think you've come a long way, Mary Kay. Yeah. It's wonderful.
I think so, too, don't you?
Yes.
I do, too. Yeah. So enjoy the weekend.
Keep practicing your golf game. You know, it's
I'm getting good. I putt for Eagle last week. I'm getting better. Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to golf tomorrow at Oak Park River Forest.
Thanks, Mary Kay. Oh, look at you. Private club.
You're not the only
one. Must be nice.
I have fancy friends, too, Dan.
Yeah, okay. I'm impressed.
I'll let you know how I do. I got to get ready for our golf tournament on.
That's right. That's a week from Monday, right?
Yeah. Are you going to be here next week?
Yeah.
Yay.
Oh, yeah. Carl, Southern Indiana.
Yay.
I'd like to touch on both the oil and plasma thing there. You know, people are donating their plasma for this high amount of money. And the oil companies are giving away oil at a certain price, but it's not their fault that they have to charge so much. I mean, give it away. The government is compelling them to give it away at a higher price with all the regulations and taxes they put on oil. It's the government forcing people to donate plasma. It's a big conspiracy.
Okay, Carl.
Yeah, one lady's making $600 a month selling her plasma. Because she has to, you know, gas prices, they're not going to stop. They're only going to keep going up. So she has to do something.
Mike, Melrose Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, that Cammie Harris was really great.
Yeah, it's good.
One of the best ones I remember was that little 12-year-old girl doing AOC impersonations, and they were dead on, and they were on YouTube and stuff, but her family was getting death threats from the left.
Yeah.
So they had to take all that stuff down.
Yeah, that's why she stopped doing it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and she was so good.
She was awesome.
Anyway.
Thanks for the call, Mike. That's a good. We'll have to brush those off. I think we still have them in our vault. We'll have to brush those off because those were. There it is.
Bill Cortez, a.k.a. AOC. And, like, I want to talk about, like, climate change. Because, like, there's no doubt cow farts are making the climate change. Like, in July, the climate was 96 degrees. And in February, the climate was 36 degrees.
She was awesome. She's a cute, cute little kid and, you know, exponentially smarter than AOC. Tom in Palos Heights.
Hi, Dan. I got an easy one for you today. Just a quick question. Why aren't we hearing anything from your running mates for the Republican governor, such as Stephanie Trumbull? She's been an excellent host.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Well, you do hear, I mean, we've had the running mates. We've had Sullivan, Bailey.
Kathleen.
Who else? We've had several
Stephanie
of the running mates on. What's that?
We've had Stephanie on.
Yeah, no, I said Bailey and Sullivan, I can remember offhand. And, I mean, you know, the running mates, it's like the VP. They're mainly like surrogates on the campaign trail, particularly at a statewide level. But we have had them on. I mean, I suppose we could have them surrogate again. But normally you want to get the principal, you want to get the governor candidates, and that's who we've had on. We've had all of them on except for, of course, Richard Irvin, who won't come on. Joe, Arlington Heights.
Hey, I wanted to help you guys out on the mystery about Kim Fox not getting charged. Apparently, per the body cam video, the cops thought that they reconciled because she told him to leave, and they went back and forth arguing about it. And then he said to her, "No, really, what do you really want from me?" And she said, "I want you to die a slow and painful death." And he said, "Oh, good, you want me to stay."
Hi-o. Thanks for the call.
You know, it's so weird because I know next Friday, then they're going to release the body cam video of the police officer. I just have a feeling.
Yeah, I mean.
They're releasing, it's a slow drip, and they always have to do it on Fridays or late
Thursday
night.
We'll see. I don't want to preordain anything, but I don't know what, in this circumstance, based on that 911 call, and then he goes out and talks to the officer, I don't know what more we're going to get, but. I guess
a confession
maybe we'll get
from her because she talked to the police, and according to the police report, they're like, "Did you slap him?" And
yeah, I suppose. I suppose we could have audio of
she
that.
She grabbed his collar. She wouldn't let him out of the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear it all.
I hope it. I mean, I'm still.
Smacked out his remote control.
Maybe we'll get Kelly Fox on the show and see if he's too traumatized to play video games anymore. Kevin in Austin, Texas.
Amy, when you go to visit the West Shore, which is Oak Park, River Forest area, I hope you drive around and take some pictures to see if there are more pride flags than American flags. And
oh, I can tell you that.
4th of July.
I can tell you the answer to that.
And also, that's one thing. The other thing I want to mention is I hope that the GOP, everybody who backed the GOP, like Tom Cronin, who's a precinct chair in River Forest, come out and support whoever the GOP nominee is. As hard as they had. If all these guys backed Irving, are they going to back whoever the GOP nominee is, who we think is probably going to be Bailey at this point? Mm-hmm. Are they going to do that? I hope everybody holds those people, call them up in your neighborhood, the precinct captain. So who are you backing now? And call them out.
Yeah. I mean, we've done that in the past, Kevin. Thanks for the call. When I ran and lost in 2010, Bill Brady won. We had a kumbaya event a couple days after the primary, and everybody was there and everybody supported Brady, and I worked for Brady in 2010, and as did other candidates who ran and lost. So, you know, tough campaigns and so on and so forth. But everybody fell in. But that was when sort of and he wasn't exactly the Combine's choice, at least in 2010, but he was serviceable to them. We'll see if it's Darren Bailey, because I don't think Darren Bailey is serviceable to these Combine surrender Republicans. And I think they're more interested in being right than they are in winning, and winning for the purposes of advancing the conservative reform flag policy wise. So we'll see. It'll be very telling, the response from the Irvin camp specifically, because I don't think you'll have trouble with the others, but with the Irvin camp specifically, if that eventuality comes to pass.
That's going to be, then we'll know for sure if he's a real Republican.
Yeah, right. Owen,
I'm not
going to
hold my breath.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Hey, how come I never hear any pushback with these climate changers when they want to make us all drive electric cars? But it takes 100 barrels of oil to make a lithium battery for an electric car. Plus, after the fact, lithium batteries are not recyclable, mm-hmm. and neither are solar panels. Nope. So they don't think about Mother Earth when we have to get rid of millions and millions of pounds as we increase the electric car market and solar panels. There's never a pushback on them.
Yeah, don't call them electric cars, Owen. Call them coal-powered cars, because that's what they are.
That's true.
Thanks for the call, Owen. And by the way, I recount this story I told before, my conversation with the CFO of Borg, a former CFO of Borg Warner, who said, you know, back when they were looking at energy advances for their machinery, the focus was on hydrogen fuel cells. That's where they saw the most promise, both economically and environmentally. But of course, that all got derailed because of the eco-terrorists' zeitgeist behind windmills and solar panels and electric cars. So nobody's against innovation in the energy space and making energy more efficient and more ecological. But, of course, it got bastardized by politics. And now look where we are. Same thing with the refineries. Oh, there hasn't been a new refinery built in this country for more than 40 years. Why is that? Well, because all of these people that are suggesting the oil companies are to blame were pursuing the extinction of oil and gas companies going back to, you know, at least your first Earth Day 50 years ago. So, you know, like all these other phenomena, they're readily explainable if you just look back in history a bit in terms of where we are now. Rick, Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I got a question for you, Dan, and your opinions. I got two things, actually. But the first one is, remember back there was a time when landfill space was all, you know, like was being filled with paper and plastic, and everybody was all worked up about that? I mean, that went as far as somebody developing a edible hamburger wrapper. That kind of faded away. And I'm wondering, is this green energy thing is going to be like that? Like once people, you know, we get people in Washington that have higher than 80 IQs, if it's going to become a back burner thing, people will work on it, but it won't be all the rage it is right now. And my second thing is go ahead.
Well, I mean, part of the problem is you're a long way down the road now with all these major car companies transforming their fleets into a significant, if not majority, electric vehicles, for example.
But,
not to mention, the War of the Worlds landscape you find in farmland around America and solar panels. It's going to be a lot to unwind, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. Hey, one other thing. Being that, you know, most people, when it comes to politics and elections, they go by the political commercial. And you dig much deeper than that. And I was wondering if you ever would put out a Bancroft political picks, you know, like on the website, a list of people you like, because you dig deep into what they're all about where most people can't. And then, you know, I'd be good with that. I would, whatever you say is, I would go with.
All right. All right. Thanks for the call.
Bancroft political picks. Yep. I like it.
Take that under advisement. Yeah.
We have breaking news. The FDA just announced the approval of the COVID vaccine.
Shocking.
For those 5 to 6 months old, both Moderna and Pfizer.
Mm-hmm.
Jebby Jeb time begins.
Fred in Hammond, Indiana has a question or answer to the question you posed earlier, Amy. Fred?
Yes, good morning. You know, Amy's wondering why
these men, grown men, are playing video games. Well, the single guys, it's obvious they don't have a girlfriend. The married guys, it's that time-release chemical in wedding cake that removes the sexual desire from the wife after she's eaten it. And that's another reason why Dan Proft isn't married.
Thanks for the call, Fred. Yeah, I didn't know about the time-release chemicals in wedding cake. Thanks for the tip. Yeah.
Time-release. You guys are bad.
Frank in Arlington Heights.
Yeah, I want to see with these leftists a car that is powered by a windmill on top of it. I mean, if they really believe in their power source, let's have one of those.
Agreed, Frank. Great point. And as I've always said, you know, I like when people, you know, be the example they would like to see in, you know, Gandhi-like fashion. So I'm all for raising those multimillion-dollar mansions from Evanston all the way up to Highland Park and making that entire area wind farms right there on the lake. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, yeah. They'll love it.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.